Okay. So, first of all, on behalf of the committee members, I would like to give you a warm welcome to you, Mr. Sofkovic, Vice President of the Commission responsible for the Energy Union, and obviously to your delegation as well, and I wish to thank you for finding the time to exchange views with us, obviously, on this such important occasion. I first of all start by introducing the members of the committee and also members who have joined this important meeting. We have Honorable Christy De Bono and Honorable Tonya Fenek from the opposition member party members. We have Dr. Deborah Shkembri, Vice Government Whip, Honorable Charles Manjon, Dr. Miriam Darley, Member of Parliament, Group of Parliament, and Dr. Godfrey Farrugia, Member and Whip of the Government, and Honorable Anthony Angeles-Dechel, as well as a member from the government side. I see that Malta is actually your 22nd member state, which you are visiting on your Energy Union tour, and which this tour have taken you from Finland to Portugal and from Ireland to Romania as well. So during which I'm sure you have witnessed, I think, different realities which on the ground makes the Energy Union different, with although it's a union, it has different purposes. The purpose of which is to create a new way of European Union policy aimed at for the European wide energy, to secure energy, to make it more sustainably, and obviously, more importantly as well, to make it affordable for citizens, and in a way which respect, obviously, the specificities of all member states. Malta being a small island state in the middle of the Mediterranean, has its own particular characteristics. As you have noticed even from the visit you have already made to particular places, I think the geophysical challenges when it comes to the energy sectors for Malta are a little bit more particular. For example, being a small and partially isolated energy system makes it more challenging for Malta to secure a diversified supply of energy whilst ensuring affordable tariffs, which obviously is very important for us as well, even for competitiveness, I would say. Despite its syndromes, Malta's energy system, I must say that it's succeeding in going through what I call an energy renaissance, thanks to the access to LNG, a now completed electricity interconnector, state-of-the-art generation infrastructure, and a larger share of integrated renewable energy. Malta also has a project of common European interest to connect Malta to the European gas network via pipeline. The pipeline is currently subject to technical studies at the moment, and it will be funded, which is the studies are also funded by the CEF fund. And moreover, Malta lies in, I would say, an interesting geographical location, which is rich in energy, and also it complements the European Union work in diversifying energy sources, routes, and suppliers. The Energy Union, along with other projects and initiatives, are most welcome here in Malta, and obviously are beneficial to both from an economic perspective to our country and also to the social well-being of the people of Malta and the European Union at large. We are therefore here very interested to hear what you have to say on such crucial topic, which is ranking high in both European and also on the local agenda. Therefore, Mr. Vice President, I give you the floor, and then I will invite accordingly my colleagues to make their comments and ask possible questions as well. Yes, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come to your new building. As we discussed, I was here when it was still a lot of scaffoldings, when we had to work in the special boots with the helmets on our head. But at that time, I already noticed the huge enthusiasm of the people who've been constructing the site, because I'm telling you that it will be as beautiful as it is right now. So congratulations. You really have a new parliament, which is modern, which is elegant, which is in the middle of the city. Even though I have to say that I very much like also your old place, because it was kind of mysterious with all the knights standing in the corridor, seeing your tapestries, which are in that special room, and I think that it would be excellent location for your presidency events, because it very well reflects the history of Malta, all that history which is very much linked with all the Europeans' upheavals, wars, peacemakings, and opening to the outside world. So I think it would be really appropriate venue for all the meetings you will have organized there. If you allow me just a couple of words where we are with the Energy Union, and then more on specific Malta plans within the Energy Union. And then, of course, I will be very happy to react to your questions. The first thing is that the Energy Union was kind of long in the making, because everybody was feeling in Europe that something with our energy system is not correct, is not right, that we pay high energy prices, we do not have that energy security we should have. We didn't manage to combine the climate agenda with our energy policies. Each member state was supporting in some kind of different way the renewables, and in a way we ended up with a situation where simply our support and schemes are so divergent, and our policies are bringing very often such a contradictory results that we just simply had to recognize, and this is what we did in our Energy Union strategy, that the energy system as we have it in Europe are not sustainable in the long term because of all that problems and shortcomings I was just referring to. Then, of course, this was already on the surface for some time, but for the leaders, you needed some additional push to actually go for that ambitious project, and that was again the preoccupation linked with geopolitics, linked with energy security as such, and I would say the conflict in the eastern Ukraine kind of brought back the memories to big part of Europe, what can happen if the gas supplies are stopped to Europe, what does it do to your citizens, to your industry, to your energy security, and therefore the idea of Energy Union was so much supported by the new president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, but also by the new president of the European Council, Donald Tusk, and therefore it was rated as one of the top priorities for the new European Commission, and we've been really pushed very much to deliver on the basic document of the new strategy as soon as possible. So we actually been getting into the office in November, and February presented our Energy Union strategy. I'm very glad to say that it was very positively perceived at that time. But now when I'm crisscrossing the Europe under the framework of Energy Union, I can say that this is a general feeling. This is a general feeling I've got. And to be absolutely honest, also because that within that framework of the Energy Union, each country and region also can highlight their local priorities. So for Nordic countries, it's more about energy transition, renewables. For Southern Europe, it's more about interconnectors and being better connected to the rest of the European systems. For Central and Eastern Europeans, this is more about the energy security. So we have different accents in different regions, and this is, I would say, the correct approach, because we in Europe we are at a different stage of development if it comes to the energy and climate policies, and we have to create the framework which would suit to all, and which would allow these divergences actually to play to our advantage. Where we are right now, we adopted the first summer package, where we focused very much on how to reform emission trading system, especially for post-2020 period. So we wanted also to kind of send it as an invitation card to all those who will take part in the conference COP21 in Paris to say that, look, Europe did its homework, we are prepared, we have very ambitious goals, and I invite all of you to do the same. Then we also changed energy labeling legislation, because we simply wanted our consumers to have more up-to-date information and to really continue to the, I would say, positive results of the previous legislation, thanks to which we until 2020 would save as much energy as Italy consumes in 1 year. So it's a lot of energy which we save thanks to this one piece of legislation which is kind of informing the consumers what electric or home appliance they should buy if they want to save the energy. And actually we see that 85% of consumers actually reading this information. Then we opened through the two communications two big debates. One on how to treat better the consumers. We want to offer them the New Deal, therefore we call it New Deal for consumers, how to make sure that if they want to produce the energy they should be allowed to, how to make sure that the energy bills are more and more transparent so that they have a better choice, they can switch suppliers if they want, and how to exchange these best practices we have across the Europe in all the legislations we are going to adopt in the coming months. And then the last big debate we open, and I will come to this later on, this is on how to reform electricity market in Europe. How to work on the new electricity market design, which would tackle some of the issues I was referring to in the beginning. Then we presented also a new communication on how to channel in more, I would say, systematic and better focused way the finances into the research and innovation. So we adopted this new strategy for energy technology plan, because we believe that we have to focus on these key enabling technologies like energy storage, better integration of renewables into the electricity grid, smart grid technologies, batteries and other areas which can clearly help us through the disruptive nature to actually achieve much faster progress. Now I'm coming to the present days. Next week I will present the State of the Energy Union report. It's the first one of this kind, where we also would have accompanying documents like the list of the project of the common interest of the PCIs and some other very important pieces of communications related to the new national energy and climate plans. We would like to ask the member states to start to work on as of 2017, and some other methodological documents which would allow us to kind of monitor better how we're progressing with the fulfillment of energy union priorities. But the most important legislative packages will come the next year. In February it would be security of supply package, where we want to revise our supply of gas directive. We want to present new LNG strategy, and we also want to present new heating and cooling strategy, because I mean in this sector we are kind of, we can say, spending or losing 40 to 50% of our energy which we use in our buildings for heating and cooling them. And we know that we already have technologies in Europe which would allow us to do much better and to save much more energy. Then in the summer, the first summer package will be on the energy efficiency, decarbonization of transport. And I would say what would be very sensitive for many member states, this would be so-called effort-sharing decision, because we would need to work on one number per member state by which we will tell them that this is what we suggest. That should be the percentage by which you have to reduce your greenhouse gas emissions from the non-ETS sector. Non-ETS meaning buildings, transport and agriculture, and I can imagine that this would be rather a complex issue, because the leader has been quite clear. They agreed that we should decrease the greenhouse gas emissions from the non-ETS sector by 30%. So we would of course have to reflect the different national specificities, but I think that would be the decision which will not be easy to adopt, and then of course even more challenging to implement. And then to conclude by the autumn package, there the major piece of legislation we are going to propose would be this new electricity market design, for which we consulted so widely, how to integrate better renewables, how to promote regional cooperation, how to ensure that we have more of a demand-side management opportunities in the system, how to give the consumers more free hand if they want to produce the energy themselves or if they want to choose another supplier. And they should go hand in hand with the new role of ACER, which is Agency for Cooperation of Energy Regulators, because we just simply need to progress in converging how our regulators are regulating, what kind of language they use, what kind of methodologies they apply, what kind of network codes they are putting in operation, because very often this I would say technical but administrative barriers are really preventing us from profiting from the biggest market in the world, which is the European one. Why we are rushing so much? Because it's quite clear that for the member states it's very important to see all pieces of the puzzle on the table. What's there for ETS, what's there for non-ETS, what you would like to achieve in transport, in electricity markets, what would be the result of COP21 in Paris. And then, of course, you would like to ask the Maltese presidency, because you will be coming just in time for the moment when everything will be on the table, to start the real negotiations with the European Parliament, with the Member States, to make sure that these proposals will not stay just the proposal of the European Commission, but we will be slowly getting them into the valid legislation, so when we conclude our term in office, we can say that the solid grounds have been built for the energy union. And the second reason why we are pushing so much is the fact that we would like to ask the member states in 2017 to come up with what I think should be at that stage probably the draft national energy and climate plans. We are going to offer next week the methodology, how we think such a plan should look like, what should be the structure, how they should cover all five dimensions of the energy union. But we also would like to kind of motivate the member states to start the thinking, reflection, but also public debates within the countries on what kind of vision they have for their plans up to 2030, how they see their country's role in the energy union, how they want to contribute to meeting the goals of 2030, how they want to transform their energy and economic systems, because this is what currently we are launching. So that's, I would say, the plan from this day until, I would say, the end of the next year. And, of course, this is very much linked with the role of the presidencies, because they will have them to pick and choose on which projects, on which proposal they will put today. Their priority. And the last thing, I think that we are all very much impressed by the international agenda you will have in the city. Yesterday the plane was full by the different delegations coming to discuss tuna fish in the ICAT event, and it was good that they also recognized Carmen Novella, even though they thought that he's an ambassador who is welcoming there, but they knew that he belongs to that world of sea and oceans.
To the tuna sector.
And then, of course, the Valletta summit, where there is a lot of hopes linked with that, because we really need not only the European but global solutions for this crisis. And then I know that you have a Chogum coming to Valletta as well, and there we very much appreciate that one of the topics you put on the table is COP21, because Chogum really brings together the countries from different parts of the globe with different approaches to the climate agenda, and therefore I think it would be very good testing ground and very good opportunity just to explain what we want to achieve here, and that we need really to have a common approach to have a good success in Paris. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your kind invitation and quick tour of your new building. Very much appreciate it, and I am very much looking forward to our discussion.
Okay, you mentioned that we have very busy schedule this month ahead in our country. I know that you have a busy schedule today, but it's very important that you still have 10 minutes as well to dedicate to this meeting. So I ask my members of parliament here to ask their questions and remarks. I ask also to be a little bit concise as much as possible, so then after the round table we can have the final remarks by the Vice President. Yes, please. Honourable De Bon.
Thank you once again, Commissioner, for honouring us with your presence and for your presentation. You mentioned briefly research and innovation. Research and innovation has long been on top of the agenda of the European Union. However, I believe still we have not yet reached our targets. How confident are you in research and innovation, its contribution to the energy union, with particular reference to the energy security?
Okay. Honourable Fanning.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's glad to see you here with us to share your thoughts. I'll go specifically on some issues relating to Malta and the energy sector. Obviously, as you have mentioned, the end game of the energy union is to give consumers the benefit of cheaper prices. Malta has a particular challenge in the energy sector because we are an isolated state, although now we have an electricity interconnection with Sicily. But clearly another priority of this country is to have a connection also for LNG gas. And we know that in the various council summit conclusions, Malta has been mentioned in terms of one of these priorities. And I'd like to know from your good self if there's any progress in this sense, also the potential funding that the European Union could do for such a project, which clearly will require support by the European Union for it to be able to materialise. We know that the Prime Minister has also mentioned the possibility that Malta could also link Europe to North Africa. I know there has been discussions to this sense, and therefore if you could enlighten us on what progress has been achieved at that level. Another important issue, as I said, is consumers. And here Malta, I think, is a bit of a situation which is very different to many markets in the European Union, because Malta still has, at this stage, a situation of one energy supplier to consumers, so the consumer has no choice in terms of from whom to acquire his energy requirements, and therefore it is not as easy, as you said, for us, for a consumer to switch from one supplier into the other, simply because, obviously, there is a possibility of cheaper prices. I think in Malta's situation also the present government strategy is not lending itself to opening up this market, although there will be private sector participation in generation of energy itself. However, the distribution has remained in the sole hands of Enel Malta Corporation, which means that the country will be tied with power purchase agreements with two major suppliers of energy for a number of years, while the consumer is not given the transparency of the pricing and the choice as to from whom it would like to buy its energy. And here I would like to see whether the Commission is assessing Malta's situation, the role of the regulator, which I think is absent at this stage in terms of the way energy prices are being fixed. We have a situation where energy prices across the globe have gone significantly down from 2 years ago, I'd say more than 70%, while in Malta energy prices have only gone down by 25%. And this shows that obviously the regulator is not doing its role in this sense, and therefore how will the Maltese consumer also benefit from the energy union? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chambery.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your presence here. The European Commission is calling 2016 the year of delivery in terms of adoption of the key legislative proposals making up the energy union. Do you see Malta's presidency of the Council of the EU as a key player in this regard? And, well, you spoke, and even Honourable Tonio Fenech spoke of the end of the energy union strategy and its ensuring of a consumer benefit from secure, sustainable and affordable energy. How do you see Malta performing in this case, and what can Malta contribute towards the energy union strategy? Thank you.
Honourable Manjon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome you here. Obviously, all the efforts that the European Union is doing is for the benefit of the consumer and the economy at large. You know that in the last 5-6 years, the economic development of Europe has been quite slow. In Malta, during the last 2 years, following a drastic reduction of 25% in the tariffs of water and electricity due to the innovative policies that the new government has introduced, we have seen our economy growing twice as much or even three times than that forecasted. And this is something, I think, which even at the European level has to be borne in mind. How are the policies that are being planned by the European Union ensuring not only security of supply and connectivity, which are very important, but also the fact that the prices for the consumer will be reasonable and obviously that the same prices for the economies, European economies, will be also competitive, because at the end of the day, our economy to grow, or the European economy to grow, has to be competitive, and the consumers to enjoy the benefit of any policy, they have to feel that the prices on a long-term basis are reasonable and affordable for them.
Honourable Dani.
Vice President, it's good to welcome you here in Malta. I will do my questions, and unfortunately I will have to leave soon after because I have to catch a flight to Brussels. I'm sure you understand that. I would like to focus on something you just mentioned. You said that in February you're launching the LNG strategy, and that is precisely my point, to focus on LNG, particularly because this commission is also giving a lot of importance to LNG as an alternative source of energy production. And as you know, and I'm sure you realized today during your visit, at the moment Malta is also undergoing a complete overhaul of its energy system, shifting to an energy mix based on, amongst others, natural gas. In this regard, how does the Maltese LNG project fit in the Energy Union strategy? And on the same wavelength, the planned gas pipeline between Malta and Italy as a project of common European interest is definitely of utmost importance to Malta to end its status of an energy-isolated island. But how will it add further value at a European level? Do you think that it can contribute to the EU's efforts in diversifying gas supply sources, routes, and suppliers? And a final note, consumers were mentioned this afternoon. How does energy poverty fit in the Energy Union strategy that the Commission is working upon? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Farrugia.
Well, I welcome you to Malta because early this year I was one of the participants in a conference that you spoke about Energy Union in Vienna. So I have listened to that conference, a conference that enlightened me quite a bit. There's no doubt that no energy strategy can be thought of without linking it to global warming and to climate change, more so when there's an ever-decreasing natural habitat due to increased urbanization, which is ultimately linked to our well-being. Going through the Energy Union strategy, especially that part that concerns the root of society, the citizen, I do notice that nothing is mentioned on the regeneration and the preservation of EU's natural wealth, I mean air, land or sea. The strategy concentrates on innovative, smart processes that save on energy, a balanced energy mix, the use of less fossil fuels and more use of renewable sources, all in the hope of ensuring an everlasting energy security, which, after all, is linked to a sustainable economy. I have three questions. Nature's economy system guarantees a given balance, and it has long been established that this is disrupted. How does the entity you represent liaison with EU environment entity to ensure that proactive measures are taken among EU countries and others outside the EU to lessen the harm done and is being done and to regenerate what has been devastated? Malta, second question. Malta is a small nation state which is overpopulated, is heavily urbanized, has no natural resources, and a poor natural capital. How do you intend to help us further? Incidentally, we are on the eve of an EU-African summit on migration. How is EU helping Africa to make the leap forward, to have more innovative low-energy sources, and to make its continent more energy sustainable whilst preserving its natural habitat? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Vice President, for finding the time to be with us here today. Two small points. In your opinion, what do you think about the Maltese situation regarding energy? And do you consider energy debate on European level as a hot issue as well?
Thank you. My final question is, as I mentioned before, Malta is experiencing what we call a renaissance, an energy renaissance, shifting from an absolute 99% based production based on oil, and now we're shifting to a healthy energy mix, which is basically a mixture of LNG in the short term, and then pipeline and natural gas in the longer term. What are the Commission's plan for natural gas, and whether it is part of your plan to decarbonize the economy by 2050?
Thank you very much. So I will try to cover as much as possible. Thank you very much for...
Put on the mic, please.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for all the questions, and I'll try to make cover as much as possible. Concerning the research and innovation, I think you are right in both ways. I mean, overall support for the research and innovation, and we already have such a long-term goal that we should invest at least 3% of our GDP into that research and innovation. Unfortunately, it's not happening across Europe. Only a few member states are fulfilling that criterion, and also the support which we provided from the former 7th Framework Program and now Horizon 2020, very often it was kind of distributed in a way that we tried to cover as much ground as possible, but of course the consequence was that the sums have been very often very small. So we didn't make that, I would say, critical mass of investment and a critical mass of channeling of the adequate sources of the financing to help the scientists to make the breakthrough, but then also to help the businessmen, the entrepreneurs, to actually use the technology to the benefit of Europeans. And therefore, very often we have seen that European innovation has been better implemented in the States, China, or somewhere in Asia, not in Europe. So I think we have to tackle both things at the same time to focus our support for, I would say, the energy technologies, which are really the key for this energy transformation, like the smart grids, like probably electric vehicles, like the batteries, like the storing of the energy, like the better inclusion of renewables into the grids and some others, and to make sure that we will also support the entrepreneurs in the market take-up of these energies, because of these technologies, because this is what was very often missing in the EU. We try to address some of these questions with our first set plan, the strategy for energy technologies, which we adopted in September, but now we are working with our research and innovation community on this global strategy for energy transition, which we will present in the September of the next year. And we are also in a close contact with the Commissioner, who is actually responsible for Horizon 2020, how to use in the best possible way the 6 billion euros we have from the EU budget between now and 2020, to make sure that when we will be talking to each other in 5 years' time, we will not have the same story to tell, that there was the money but not the results we could be that proud of. And then the questions linked with, I would say, with Malta prices and the Delimara power plant and of also the link with Northern Africa, which Tonio and Silvio have been asking. Here, I think that that this project is really very important for Malta, because and I understand that as a big project, it also is accompanied by the big debate. But what I think it's very important is the fact that we are moving from here from this heavy oils with lots of I would say dangerous particle being emitted every year by the plant, lots of CO2 emissions to something which is modern, which is LNG based, which would reduce the CO2 emissions by 1.1 million ton per year, which I think is quite significant from the point of view of global effort, but also from the point of view of air pollution for the multi citizens. Then I think what is also very important, and I was there in the morning, that you see that this is kind of a groundbreaking project, which could serve, I believe, as a kind of blueprint from other projects, because you are linking up, I would say, the several technologies together, LNG to electricity, conversion of all oil-based power plant into the LNG, and you are going to be supplied by the LNG ships, which is, I would say, new global market. And I was in the States just the last week, and you see that really the exporters there are eager to export, and the Congress is debating it with a great intensity, that how many restrictions which still there are for banning the exports of crude oil and LNG would be lifted. And of course, with the arrival of United States, Canada, Australia into the LNG market, we see that the prices are dropping, and we see that the global market is being formed, and gas is becoming this global commodity, which I think it's very important to acknowledge. And therefore, we also want to come up with the LNG strategy as early as next February, because I think that LNG should become the part of Europe's energy mix. The prices for energy have been more competitive. The pipeline gas we've been receiving from traditional suppliers for some time. So I think that we would simply benefit from opening this import portfolio in Europe. And at the same time, I think we would also contribute to the consolidations of the global market as the biggest energy importer in the world by showing our openness to import LNG. For that, we need terminals, as you are building here, but we need them at all strategic locations. We need better interconnections, because we need to have more liquid markets, so that not only the LNG can be brought, let's say, to Spain, and then it's stuck there because you do not have enough interconnectors with the rest of the continental system. So therefore, here I think that the Malta, being the island, your interconnectors to Italy for electricity, I think it's very important. But at the same time, it's a subsea cable, so I think it's very important from the point of view of energy security to be sure that you have always adequate capacity, what you can get from Italy, what you can generate your own, and of course to let also the market play its role, so your consumers would pay the best and lowest possible price. And the same, I think, goes for the gas interconnector. There we've been working very closely with the Maltese authorities to make sure that this project would remain on the PCI list. They're adopting it in the next week. I don't expect any surprise, so I believe that it will be on the list. And there, of course, the PCI, Project of the Common Interest List, has several, I would say, advantages. One, it's the kind of expectation that the permitting processes would be faster than usual, because in Europe it takes us in average 11 to 12 years to actually agree upon and build something. And I think electricity interconnector also took some 7 years, I think, to realize. Then, of course, the EU budget can help with the feasibility studies. Then there is a Connecting Europe facility which could be used. And then we introduce also the Juncker Investment Fund to finance the borderland cases where the private investors are kind of hesitant if this project would be, let's say, commercially viable or not. And we also adopted the possibility to blend the different sources of financing. So I hope that we can find a good solution for you. At the debate we had at the university, there have been two gentlemen who have been also presenting quite interesting project. I know that you know them, about linking Tunisia with Malta, with Italy, using the solar potential that North Africa has. I think that we've been trying to do it before in these different solar projects. Because of the security situation there, many of these projects may not prolonged, but I think we would have to return back to this territory, because it's very important for Africa to bring them new renewables technology, but it could serve as a very important energy security element also for Europe, because the potential is there. We just need to have smart grids and good interconnectors so we can benefit from all the sun which is in northern Africa. And I think that these projects would fit very well into our Mediterranean strategy, because there we want to cooperate in the gas field, in electricity, and in renewables. The role of the presidency, I think that your presidency is really coming in the crucial time, because I think it would be kind of in the halftime of the commission. So as I said, for the energy union, I can say that 90% of the proposals should be on the table by then. I think the same would apply for digital single market. So I would say two flagship initiatives will be on the table. And then, of course, it's up to the presidency to do this very difficult job to organize this co-legislative process, to start the debate within the council, working groups, meeting of ambassadors. In this case, it will be COREPER 1 sessions, and to get it to the ministers for this general approach for the qualified majority voting, and then, of course, even more challenging then to find a common ground with the European Parliament. So it's a hard work. Usually, my experience is that it takes from 1 to 2 years to complete the work, and it would be just the high time for your presidency to really enter in and help us to or start up the new files which will be just presented, or to continue with some of the negotiations which I hope that the Dutch and Slovaks who would be in your trio presidency would open, so we can really see the tangible progress before the end of the commission. So you definitely would be a key player, and it would be very much up to the presidency to judge the progress, what to put when on the agenda, and how to make sure that the files are moving in the right direction. Concerning the prices and the growth, of course, I think that the energy poverty, which Miriam was asking about, all this is very much interlinked, and I think that in the end, the energy prices and the contribution of the energy union to the growth, to the jobs, and to the limiting of the energy poverty would be the key criteria by which the citizens would judge if the energy union was working or not. So that's clearly one of the tasks, and how to get there, we think that we need to progress through all five dimensions: improve energy security, complete internal energy market, but also achieve our energy efficiency and decarbonization agenda, and be better in research and innovation. And if it comes to the transparency of the prices, here we are in such a paradox that we have very low wholesale prices in Europe, that the people and the energy companies are complaining that it's not worth to invest, but at the same time we have very high end-user prices across the Europe. In Malta, I think now we went quite significantly down, but it's not case all over Europe. I would say it's quite to the opposite, and the reason for that is that between wholesale price and end-user price, you have a lot of items which are in energy prices, a different kind of local fields, distribution, network payments, local taxes, and so on and so forth. And, of course, this is in the decision of the member states how to deal with this. But what we want to contribute with is that we want to make every 2 years such a transparency exercise where we want to use Eurostat and to kind of analyze the energy prices in every member state. What is energy related, what is not, what we think should be in, what we think should be treated by other budget allocations, because that, I think, would bring a little bit more fair comparison how much energy costs across the Europe. And I'm being told that I'm already a little bit over my time, so I'm sorry if I didn't cover everything, but it's quite clear that energy is a hot issue everywhere, and it will remain like, because it's really touching every single part of the society, every single part of our economic activity. So I will be very happy to come again to report to you how we are progressing. Sure. And of course, if you would have a trip to Brussels, so it's always a pleasure to meet the MPs from the national parliaments. I was responsible for that in my previous portfolio, and I know that without national parliaments, it's very difficult to achieve the European consensus. So thank you very much for the possibility to meet you, to see your buildings, and to answer your questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Vice President, for this obviously very informative meeting, and for the energy you are putting in this energy sector as well. And we, from our side, rest assured of our cooperation so that all of us can reach these aims and these goals. Thank you once again, Mr. President.
Thank you.